A little over a week ago, a school district in Rhode Island announced that it would no longer serve hot lunches to students who owed money from past cafeteria purchases. Instead, those students would only be given cold sunflower butter and jelly sandwiches. The plan was supposed to help address the thousands in lunch debt that had piled up, but instead, it sparked a national backlash and accusations of so-called lunch shaming, prompting Warwick, Rhode Island, to scrap the plan. Across the country, school lunch debt has prompted some districts to take measures that can be humiliating for students, like serving them a lesser meal or giving them a stamp on their hand. In some cases, private citizens, including the CEO of yogurt maker Chobani and the family of Philando Castile, a cafeteria worker who was shot and killed by police, have stepped up to pay thousands of dollars in debt when families cannot. But concerns about whether students should be saddled for debt for school lunch remain. Joining me now to talk about the state of school lunch policy is a reporter for the New Food Economy, Jessica Fu. Jessica, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's unpack how this all works, because I was a kid that got free lunch, but I was a poor kid. So I thought everybody got free lunch. Who's paying for lunch and who doesn't? How does it work?
That's a great question. School lunch is mostly funded by the Department of Agriculture. And the amount of funding that they provide to schools depends on the number of students each school has who qualifies for free lunch, who qualifies for reduced price lunch, and then the number of students who pay full price for lunch. The USDA subsidizes all these students. However, the amount that it subsidizes, the extent to which it subsidizes each student, depends on their income. So there's a lot of families whose income falls slightly above federal guidelines for free and reduced price lunch, but whose families might not be able to afford to pay for a hot meal every single day, sometimes more hot meals because they might have multiple children in the household.
Tell us a little bit about this idea of lunch shaming. That's sort of become part of the conversation, at least in the last year or so, which I've heard. What is lunch shaming?
Lunch shaming refers to an array of practices that schools use to single out students who may not have the funds on a given day to purchase a hot meal. That can manifest in many different ways. For some schools, for example, for Warwick in Rhode Island, that would have looked like sun butter sandwiches. For other schools, students often get stamped with a hand stamp that says needs lunch money or no funds.
We were talking a little bit before the segment about the emotional toll that that can have. I mean, you were saying just being in a cafeteria alone can be stressful, right? Tell me a little bit more about that.
I think the reason why these stories have really gotten a lot of attention recently is because of how emotional they are and how personal they feel. The idea that a child would be singled out and stigmatized for not having the funds for a hot meal in the middle of the day is very emotional and very compelling. And I think that's what's driving so many people to be generous and try to donate money to schools who are enduring lunch debt.
Let's talk about that, because there have been a bunch of examples of people and organizations who have done that. Can you tell us a little bit? Remember Philando Castile, for example, the man who was killed by police officers a couple of summers ago. That was a big thing that he did, and his family has gotten involved in trying to erase lunch debt. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. In the case of the Warwick School District in Rhode Island, for example, I understand that the CEO of Chobani Yogurt donated $77,000 to wipe out lunch debt for students. Philanthropy and charity is a common response to stories about lunch debt.
But it doesn't really wipe it out, right? It's a temporary fix.
Exactly. It's not a long-term solution, and it's not a sustainable solution. There's a lot of schools that host fundraisers. There's a lot of parents' associations that host GoFundMes on the internet. But ultimately, there's going to be another school year. There's going to be another school semester. And what happens to the lunch debt that accumulates then and is no longer part of the new cycle?
Are you seeing pushback in other districts around the country? Are parents trying to make a change? Is the local government or school districts trying to, like, what are people trying to do to make this different?
One of the reasons why lunch debt has become such a big issue is because the cost of living is really rising, whereas wages are stagnating. The other thing is that schools themselves have much less leeway to eat the costs of unpaid balances. Lunch debt has been rising steadily. I know that through anecdotal stories and through speaking with directors of nutrition services at schools, I understand that labor costs, the costs of ingredients, those things are all on the rise, and it's no longer feasible for many schools to just write off unpaid dues.
What about the Department of Agriculture? I mean, what would it take to get universal free lunch in school?
I think that would take legislative action. That's not something that I've come across in my research on the history of this subject. Universal free lunch is available in some school districts, for example, New York City. These are schools who qualify because a large enough proportion of their student body qualifies for free and reduced price lunches. However, that's not the case with every school, but many schools experience lunch debt nonetheless.
Jessica Fu is a reporter for the New Food Economy. Jessica, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.